My name is Rabbi Bricks. I'm originally from New York, so I apologize about that. Then I upgraded to Miami, and then I upgraded to Israel. So it keeps getting better and better. Somehow L.A. got skipped in the process. If you think about relationships, whether it's a dating relationship, a business relationship, often miscommunication, not understanding someone else, often leads to challenges, leads to fights, leads to relationships breaking down and falling apart. So what I would like to do is to share a few real-life examples, actual cases, crazy incidents that really happened. And I want you to imagine that you were the judge and you had to decide who's right in this dispute. Before we do that, I just want to take a look at the world for a minute. Let's say you had two people fighting over $10,000. Let's make it $100,000. David and Michael are fighting. David says, you owe me $100,000. I don't owe you anything. And they're fighting back and forth. And you don't know anything about why he makes a claim. You don't know anything about the details of the case. All you know is David has hired one of the best lawyers in the world. And Michael is defending himself. Who do you think has a better chance of winning the case?
Mike.
Oh, right, it's Brian. That makes sense. Okay. Right, who has a better chance of winning? Got a better lawyer. Now, if you think about it, that's really sad.
Yeah.
Why should that matter? We're trying to find out who's right. Right? The judge, the courtroom should be about finding the truth. Does he owe him the $100,000 or not? Why should it matter that one guy is spending more money on the lawyer?
Money talks.
It's true, money talks. But also, more often than not, when it comes to secular disputes and court cases, it's not about right and wrong. It's about winning and losing. And even if you know you're wrong, you want to win the case. And if you lost, you're going to be upset at yourself, at your lawyer, even if you know you were wrong, because it's not about right and wrong. It's about winning and losing. When it comes to Jewish courts, a Beit Din, the goal is to find the truth. And therefore, if you say to me, I owe you $1,000, $10,000, $100,000, my feeling should be, I don't want stolen money in my possession. If you think that I owe you money, let's go happily together to the Jewish court to find the truth. And if they rule that it's your money, I'm not mad. I'm great. I'm so happy. I don't have stolen money. And if they rule it's my money, then he's thrilled. He's not taking stolen money. We can be friends again. And we can walk out together closer than we were before we got there. And we actually believe that God sits down with the judges to inspire them to reach the proper verdict. So what I would like to do is actually do an experiment and transform ourselves into a Jewish courtroom where you guys will be the judges and see if you can anticipate what the Jewish court would rule on some of these crazy cases. Case number one. We're going to start with dating. Has anyone here ever heard of a shadchan?
Yeah.
Matchmaker. Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me. Okay, yes, okay. So a shadchan does not mean some old lady in the corner street in Jerusalem says, I know a boy for you. And like, you never met the guy. It could be that. But a shadchan, more often than not, it's basically a blind date. It's someone who knows you, who knows the other person, says, you know, based on what I know of you and know of it, it seems like you guys could be compatible. It seems like you could be a match. And then you don't just say, okay, great, let's go out. You say, well, let me check. Let me find out more information, maybe make some inquiries. You might even check their social media status, you know, whatever you do for your research. And then if you decide it looks good and the other person says it looks good, you then go out on your first blind date. And then it doesn't mean you get married. It means you then see, are you compatible? Are you attracted? How the personalities work? And then you go for a second date and it progresses. The custom is, it's not a requirement, but the custom is that if you end up getting married to the person that was set up by the shadchan, that you give a gift to the shadchan. Some people even do it as a profession. So like you have a real estate broker and you have a matchmaking broker. And in some communities, the typical fee might be $1,500. It's not a fee. It's not a required thing, but the gift. $1,500. What you think about to find your soulmate, that's a pretty good deal, right? $1,500. Thank you so much. So here's what happened. This is an actual case. There was a guy, we'll call him Reuven. Reuven is looking for his soulmate. His friend Shimon says, Reuven, I've got a great girl for you. He says, really? Tell me about her. He tells her about this and that. And he's like, oh, sounds great. Shimon approaches the girl, says, I've got a great guy for you. She tells him about Reuven. Oh, it sounds great. They go on their first date. Reuven comes back to Shimon. It was fantastic. She had everything. I was looking for so many good qualities. I'd like to go out again. So Shimon says, I'm so happy to hear that. The only thing is, I don't have time to be the matchmaker, like, for the whole dating process. You know, sometimes the issues come up, and there's drama, and there are questions, and there's confusion, and disputes, and I'm busy. I got, you know, H-Lit events, and I've got, you know, classes to go to, and places to go, and people to see, and Spain trips, and all these things going on. I can't. So, but you know what? I'm perfectly fine if you want to get a different, replace me. Get a different matchmaker to replace me, and I understand we'll split the gift at the end if things work out. Now, just so you know, typically if that happens, if one matchmaker introduces the couple and a different matchmaker takes over for the dating process, it's typically split one-third, two-thirds. The original matchmaker gets one-third of the gift, and the one, in this case, $500, and the new matchmaker gets two-thirds, $1,000. So here's what happens. You're not going to believe this. Reuven is thinking to himself, who can I get to be the new matchmaker? I need someone who's sensitive, who's responsible, who's committed, who's going to invest their time and energy into making this work. I know just the perfect person. Me. Reuven says to himself, I've got a great personality. I'm very committed. I'm invested to put in the time and effort to make this work. I'm responsible. I'm also good at disguising my voice. So Reuven decides he is going to be his own matchmaker going forward in the dating process. So Reuven calls up the girl's parents. How did it go? Were there any questions or issues that came up? And they go on the second date. Then a third date. Then a fourth date. There were issues. There were questions, but Reuven was fantastic. He smoothed things over. He did a great job, put in a lot of time and effort, a lot of energy. And they got engaged. We are now at the engagement party. The girl's parents are smiling, huge smiles. They go over to Shimon, the original matchmaker. Shimon, thank you for introducing them. What a great couple. Here is $500 with our thanks. They then go over to Reuven. Say, Reuven, we never got to meet the other matchmaker in person. He was so kind. He was so sweet. He did such a good job. Here is $1,000. If you could please give it to him with our thanks for a job well done. After the party's over, Reuven goes to his rabbi and he says, what should I do? Right? Option one is give the money to Shimon. I mean, Shimon's the guy that set it up originally. Say, Shimon, shh, between us, here's $1,000. Just enjoy it, spend it well. Option two, Reuven says, I'll give it to the girl's parents. Give it back to them. Say, guys, I have to come clean. It was really me. Hope you won't kill me. Here's $1,000 back. Option three, I'll keep it. Reuven did do an excellent job. He did work hard. They are actually engaged, right? And you could add other options too. Okay? Ready, set, and go. Who would like to offer an opinion? One, two, three, or go.
I would give it to the original matchmaker.
Original matchmaker, why?
Because he did all the work.
The original one? All he did was introduce them.
Yeah, that's good enough.
Okay, so Brian says, look, he introduced them. That's good enough. Give it to him. You were next, I think. What are you?
I say give it back.
Give it back to the parents. And say, listen, honesty is the best policy. I got to come clean. Hope he still lives till the next day. Okay, who is next?
I agree.
Give it back to the parents.
Yeah, I have a terrible conscience, though.
Yeah, how's he going to live with himself, you know, okay?
Give it back to the parents, but ask them to give it to Shimon.
Okay, give it. So come clean to the parents and say, I can't take this money, but I think you should give it to Shimon, okay? That's what he's doing. He's asking a rabbi. But you guys are the rabbi now.
Oh, no.
You're the rabbi. So, wait, your name again? Rebbetzin Michelle. What should we do?
What would make you feel happiest?
So Rebbetzin Michelle gives a fourth answer. She says, sit, like, meditate and just see what makes you feel good. Okay, we got four options. Yeah.
Keep
it for himself. Why?
Why? Because it's not a real payment. It's all customary, and he did have the job, so he.
Okay, so he's got two reasons. One, it's just a custom anyway. It's not like an obligation. And number two, he did do the work, right? At the end of the day, they were engaged. Mazel tov. Keep the money. Shalom Aleichem. Yes?
This isn't
You're speaking in her behalf. Okay, fine. Go.
Opinion? On whose behalf?
I'm joking.
I'm just going off of what he just said.
Okay.
Okay,
so option five. So you're saying, so if you're going with him, at least give it to tzedakah.
But that's not what I would.
Okay, but what you would do,
give
it back to the parents.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think he could go to the parents, come clean, and say, here's your money. If you want to give it to me, I'd accept.
And if you want to behead me, here's the head.
Exactly. But if it's still there, and if now it's their choice because they know the truth.
Okay.
Can I ask you a question?
You can.
If a matchmaker introduced someone and then there wasn't a second matchmaker, but they just introduced them and then there wasn't more of the process, how much would they get paid?
Okay, your name?
Marla.
Okay, Marla is starting us on the right track, so I'm going to not take any more points. I want to jump off what Marla just said. The first point is that you cannot be your own objective third party for yourself. You cannot be your own matchmaker.
Yeah, conflict of interest.
The fact that he put in effort, of course you're going to put in effort for yourself. It's you're the one dating. You don't get paid to put an effort to date. You know, so if you're not part of the deal and then you work at it, then you're entitled to a commission. So Reuven is not entitled to a commission. He's not entitled to be a matchmaker. So it's as if there was no second matchmaker. And that goes back to what Marlo was saying. So if there's no second matchmaker, it's as if there was only one matchmaker all along. Now, all he did was introduce them. But just like with real estate transactions, I said there's a few real estate people here, sometimes you work really hard for a deal, and sometimes there's one phone call. You get the same commission. You still get the commission. So in this case, Shimon did very little work, but since there was no other matchmaker, he's entitled to the entire commission. Now, what about coming clean with the parents? What about honesty is best policy? So the rabbis who met with Reuven, they understood that this, first of all, this was wrong, what he did, okay? This was wrong, it was lying, it was deceptive. Well, I'm not recommending this to anyone. But they understood that for Reuven, this was outside of his character. That normally Reuven was a kind, honest, sweet, gentle person. He made a big mistake in this case. But if they would demand and insist that he tell the parents now, they would cancel the whole thing, and they would essentially wrongly think that he's a lying, cheating kind of person. That's the way he is. And they would be misleading the parents by insisting on it. Instead, by not making him say anything now, on the 10-year wedding anniversary, you say, boy, do I have a story to tell you, and then they could all live happily ever after. Okay, that's case one. We're going to go a little fast now through the remaining cases because we're running out of time. Case number two. We're now at the wedding. Mazel tov. I'm not sure. I don't think so, but you could pretend it is if you want. We're at the wedding, and Pepsi is a real story. Pepsi is running a promotion. When you open the cap on the Pepsi bottle, if it says car, you win a new car. Now, the parents of the bride who are paying for the wedding and the caterer who was buying the supplies, neither one of them knew about this promotion. But they did buy many drinks, including many Pepsi bottles. And each table had one of those big Pepsi bottles, you know, a big 2-liter, 3-liter bottle on the table. And as the guests were enjoying their food and their drinks, one guest opens up the bottle on his table. He goes, I want a car! I want a car! What, you want? Yeah, I want a car! Look, I want a car! And he's jumping up and down. He gets really into the dancing now. This guest is all into, excited. Get to the end of the night. He's wishing mazel. He says, I want to thank you so much. I had such a beautiful time. And guess what? I want a car! What do you mean you want a car? Look, I won with a Pepsi bottle. I want a car! So the father of the bride says, you didn't want a car. He goes, yeah, I want a car. No, I want a car. So when you want a car, who do you think paid for the wedding? Because then I opened the bottle, but I paid for the wedding. They're going back and forth, back and forth. The caterer comes running over. Excuse me, gentlemen. Who do you think bought the bottle? Who selected the bottles in the store? Who picked them up? Who's cleaning up after the event? It's me. The three of them are going at it, and now they're in the Jewish court. They're coming before you, honorable delegates, honorable judges. Who gets the car?
The guest.
Why?
Because he picked it up.
So guests picked it up. Finders keepers.
The person who threw the party because they didn't quite throw that away. It's different if somebody, let's say like I did that, let's say that same scenario, and then I threw it in my dumpster, and then you went dumpster diving.
Okay.
Finders, that's one man's trash is another man's treasure. But it was at the party.
Okay. So he's saying if the party's still going on, and therefore it's the ownership is still retained by the person who paid for it.
Yeah, like if I'm in Rabbi Jass' house and I found like a bag of, you know, something in Rabbi's house.
So you have to get a
but won't the rabbi let you eat the stuff in the house? The bag?
Yeah, but...
Not the cap.
And drink? Well, I can't eat the cap, okay?
Yeah,
go.
I think the opposite point. I think that if you're having a party, everything you put out is essentially a gift to your invitees.
Okay, so we got a big dispute happening here. When people put the food out and the drinks out, what is being offered to the guests and what is being retained by the hosts? That's the you bought your book. Okay.
But the container is owned by the. I mean, who's gonna throw out the container? It's not the guest. It's
Okay. So some people are arguing here: the drinks are for the guests. The container is not for the guests. Any other suggestions? And even with that, you still have to decide between the caterer and the owner. I don't know if Pepsi was thinking about this part. No requirement
right.
To buy it.
So I think for that reason, then it's the guest.
Guest, okay.
Give it to the newlywed couple.
Newlywed couple, wedding gifts.
I think we can cut out the guest from the equation because he is interchangeable. There could have been it could have been opened by anybody.
Okay.
However, it could only be bought and paid for by the two people that bought and paid for it.
Okay.
So I think remove the guest and then the next two.
And then who gets between the owner and the caterer?
I don't know, but I think we can...
How do you remove the guest from the equation?
Okay, so then the caterer also, and with the same way of thinking, anyone could have bought it, but who would pay for the wedding? Only the parents of the...
Okay.
Or
yes.
Had the guest not chicken and the egg, mentioned right? The fact that he had the car, he got the lid with the car, then this wouldn't have been an issue. Yeah.
So then no one would have got it. So it would have gone to the garbage.
They
didn't know about it.
They didn't know. Like, saw the lid and was like, oh, this car, taking it home. Yeah, taking it home with me. Why do I have to tell anyone about it? It's like winning the lottery and telling everyone right away. Like,
I would say the guest because they didn't even know the promotion was going on.
Yeah. Right.
So like,
all right.
That's like you find something under someone's house and you just bought it. You still have to return it.
Oof. Okay. All right. You guys ready? Here we go. He is. All right. First issue is some of you were torn about the caterer versus the owner. So I remember when I made a bar mitzvah for both my sons. There was a contract with the caterer. And the contract actually stipulated what happens to the bottles after the event. And it said all open bottles go to me, the guy making the party, and all closed bottles go back to the caterer. Now, I don't know if every contract says that, but one thing you might want to do is take a look at the contract and see, is that delineated who keeps what after the party? That, in theory, would be a way to determine who gets it between the spender and the caterer. However, there is a concept in Judaism. Oh, wait, before we get to that, let's also say that some of you pointed this out. I think it's a very good point. If one of you guys, hey, look, all these beers are being offered. That's so nice, the meluls, and you could drink a beer, right? No problem. What if you took a big bag and put 20 beers in your bag and started walking out of the house, right? Did the meluls have that in mind, right? That would probably not be part of what they were hoping for. So
it happened before, but not with beer.
Right. But the fact that it's happened doesn't mean that it's right, right? In other words, taking a drink or taking a bite are things that are offered to the guests. Taking the actual plates or bottles are generally not being offered to the guests. Someone to walk around the party and collect all the empty bottles to recycle them without the permission of the owner also potentially would be considered stealing. So therefore, normally it would go to either the guy making the wedding or the caterer. However, there is a concept in Judaism that you must have intent in order to acquire something. Since the caterer and the father of the bride did not know about the promotion. So when they bought those bottles, they acquired the fluid, the drink. They acquired the bottle, the recycling of the bottle. They did not acquire the rights to winning the car. That's called hefker. It's called ownerless in Jewish law. Therefore, whoever opens the bottle cap first is entitled to the car. But the guest must reimburse the parents for the recycling, 25-cent recycling cap. Now, hopefully, again, Jewish law is about who's entitled to something. There's another thing called doing the right thing and the yashar, the straight thing. So meaning it might be a nice thing for the guest to now say, I'm going to make a very large present to the bride. You know, maybe give half the value of the car or something like that would be strongly recommended. Okay, since we're just about out of time, I want to do one very, very, very quick case, because this is going to show you a little bit of a taste as to the power of learning Torah. If you've gone on the J-Lit trip or other trips like that to Israel to learn Torah, see for yourself how powerful it could be and how dangerous it could be if the power is misused. There were five guys studying yeshiva in Jerusalem who wanted to take a taxi to the airport to go home for Passover vacation. The problem was only four guys fit in a taxi. There were one taxi company owned two taxis. So they should have paid for two taxis, ordered two taxis, 300 shekels each, 600 shekels. They didn't want to do that. It's a waste for a whole extra taxi for one guy. Now, luckily for them, they had an extra suitcase, and one of the guys was very small. So they put the fifth guy into the suitcase. They ordered only one taxi. They put the suitcase into the trunk. They get in the car. The car starts driving, and these guys are smiling. They're so happy. This is great. We tricked the driver. We have a friend in the trunk. And they're speaking in French. They knew French, so he wouldn't understand what's happening. He happened to understand French also. Uh-oh. He keeps driving, gets to the airport. They get out of the car. They're about to open the trunk. He drives off. He goes to an undisclosed location, opens the trunk, opens the suitcase, tells the guy, right now you're going to miss your flight. If you want me to take you back to the airport and make your flight, you need to pay me 1,500 shekel, which is the cost the police would have fined me for having you ride in my trunk. Oh, wow. He gives him 1,500 shekel, takes him to the airport. The guys go home, they come back, and now they bring the driver to the Jewish court to Beis Din. They claim they want the 1,500 shekels back. He says, not only do I not owe you that, you owe me another 300 shekel for the other tax you're supposed to buy with my company. Judges, quick, what do you say?
I think that he has to give the money back because he took him without his consent over into a situation where he was forced to give money to come back. He could have just, in the moment of him understanding in French what was going on, stopped the car right there and say, I'm not going to take any of you guys to the airport unless you pay for another cab.
Okay, so you're saying so the 1,500 shekel for sure goes back. What about 300 shekel for the second taxi?
Should be paid.
Not sure about that.
Not sure about that. Okay, other people.
Should be paid.
Should be paid.
And 1,500
So he says 1,500 goes back, but 300 you should pay for the second taxi.
They both wrong each other.
Is there a contract that obligates them to order a taxi from him?
He was the only guy in the only company in the area.
Because if I'm driving a friend and they don't wear a seatbelt, I'm not going to say, hey, can you pay me $75 for that ticket that you're going to get?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm not going to do that.
Right.
So why should you?
Right. So look, she's another argument. She said he kept driving, so therefore shouldn't get the 1,500 shekel. She's saying he was never caught. So if you were caught and you were fined 1,500 shekel, maybe get reimbursed. But here, for a theoretical, hypothetical fee that never happened, you're not telling me reimbursed. For the second. Okay, so you're both agreeing, pay the 300 shekel, not the 1,500.
Did they already pay 300 shekel for the first case?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, listen up.
I say they should order some kebab and chili.
Get ready to just get a taste of the wisdom and the power of Torah when it comes to these things. As you all said, he's not entitled to the 1,500 shekel, right? For the reasons you gave, right? Number one, he heard them say it and he kept driving. And number two, he wasn't actually fined. But what about the 300 shekels for the second taxi? The rabbis did a survey of yeshiva guys. They got 100 yeshiva guys. He said, how much of a discount would you want to ride in the trunk of a taxi in a suitcase instead of in a seat? And they found the average yeshiva guy said 50% off. You give me 50% off, I will have... Now, by the way, if they asked seminary girls, you know, what sort of discount would you want, she would say, no way! Maybe if you pay me $1,000, I'll consider going a bit, right? So, but for yeshiva guys, like it's a chavaya, it's like it's cool, it's like bragging rights, I'll take a selfie, you know, it's a whole thing. So therefore, the value that they got was not a second taxi, it was a trunk ride, which is 150 shekel, not 300 shekel. And therefore, they were obligated to pay 150 shekel for the second taxi and not 300.
They got the money back for 1,500, right?
Yeah, they got the 1,500 back.